Welcome to the Performance Health Podcast. My name is Tim Caring. Today I'm talking about the dream list of a weight room that I would love to design one day. I think we all have that hypothetical or that fantasy of what would I put in the weight room if I had complete free reign. That's what I wanted to break down in this episode. A lot of great topics talking about the rack selection, machine selection, how you're going to utilize certain spaces based off a program you want to run. I had fun with this one. This one a little long, so I hope you don't mind. If you like what you're hearing, please like, subscribe, and share. That makes a big difference. Plus, it just keeps me moving forward. And then the other part is go to phpodcast.com. I've got a bunch of membership options between the coaching and collective membership, as well as the foundations and strength deficit course, which are monster resources if you're a strength conditioning coach out there. All right, let's talk about building the dream weight room.
Tim, episode 10, we're wrapping up facility design today. So today we're just hitting the wish list. So you get the opportunity, blank check, unlimited space. We dive and went to strength coach heaven. Let's start with your wish list. What kind of racks are you getting?
So I think first thing we should talk about is how much do we want this station or this rack to be able to accommodate, right? So there's two levels to this. I want to stay at that station, as we talked about, from a rack based, and I want to do assembly line, or I want to have a bunch of options and flow through the things. Let's start with like just a basic bare bones rack. One brand that obviously everyone's aware of would be Sorenex. I'm old enough to remember when Sorenex wasn't the go-to. And then over the past 15 years, it just blossomed and evolved from the optionality. And just essentially the original version you have is a fraction of what it's going to be, which is one of the coolest, most interesting aspects behind Sorenex. It's if you can imagine it, you can build it. And then their creativity and their overall just effort towards innovation is unprecedented. But you look at it from the other level of it, they're big, they take up a lot of space, they're really heavy. There's a lot to that aspect as well, especially when you start working with general populations. Like a lot of this is over-engineered. And there's some aspects of it too. Some stuff is just wildly unnecessary. I'll be the first to say it. I think jammer arms are stupid. I don't get it. I think they're so unnecessary. The strength curve, the resistance profile, there's a couple exercises, maybe like a rotational jammer or like some sort of shot put. But everything else is it's not that great, man. It's vertically loaded and it moves through this 90 degree arc that doesn't load either the muscle group or that movement pattern through the entire arc, but whatever. You could argue it's like a glorified monolift if you want to do bench. I don't love it for that either. Most of the time, they're just in the way and unnecessary and expensive. And then I would also say the triphasic bars or the pull-up bars that go off fit, horribly unnecessary. If anything, it just creates a list of exercises that I'll never do. I'll be the first to say it. Sure, maybe I'm risk averse. And I was accused on a post from whatever that guy's name is, Austin Jokum, of I'm a helicopter coach. And it was stemmed from the fact that I think one of the most overrated exercises is a band-assisted jump. I think it's stupid. I just don't get it. But we're putting a lot of faith in a band that has a very high probability of breaking. The most I do with bands is some pal-off presses and hamstring stretches, and those things break all the time. And you want to tell me that I'm going to put a million-dollar athlete suspended 6 feet into the air with this band and pulling it to maximum tension and high speeds? Like, I'm not doing it, man. Not doing it. But outside of maybe like band assisted jumps, I really don't get like a whole lot of why the triphasic bar exists. One note though, I think is interesting is it does give you a straight bar pull up option if you wanted to pair that up with a squat. If you're like, hey, like it does give me options there. It's a little high for a bar, specifically with the Sorenex racks. Like, majority of us are probably going to get a 9 foot rack, which is pretty dang high for most general populations and every sport outside of basketball and maybe football. But there's that one. Yeah, maybe you do that. But I would also argue if you're getting the triphasic bar or the jammer arms, you're probably getting a cross bridge, which you can put a pull up bar in there as well. The cross bridge kind of makes that a triphasic bar obsolete. Sorry to anyone out there that has it. I believe. And then the other options off of that, like you can get a full rack, you get a half rack. I got both, depending on like the spacing I need. I still like the idea of a full rack for things like isometronics or some rack pulls. I like doing it inside the rack. I like the idea of squatting inside the rack and doing maybe some accessory work like a dumbbell row on the platform or in front of the rack. there is a world where you want to superset a barbell exercise with a barbell exercise, like a bench and a squat. Not saying you should. There is a world where that's potential. It's not the easiest thing in the world because basically you're squatting with a bench right in front of you. But all that being considered, is going back to the original brand, the Soaring X is going to create a lot more options, and that's a good thing. And they're incredibly durable. They're incredibly quality. Like, they're aesthetically really nice. You can get them in any color. So they're phenomenal in a lot of ways. But then we got to go to maybe some other traditional, like, just racks that don't have a whole lot of bells and whistles. Like, Powerlift is a great brand too. They have some phenomenal just basic racks, like half racks and full racks. A lot of their stuff is pretty heavy, which if you're working with exclusively football, you don't worry about stuff like that. But then when you get like a cross-country team in there or a golf team in there and they're just struggling to change the safety catches or the J-hooks, like the Powerlift J-hooks are probably 25 pounds. I may be exaggerating that, but they definitely feel like it. So much so that I can't change it out with one hand. And I'm pretty savvy and I'm pretty experienced with changing out J-hooks. And then watching one of your cross-country kids change out a J-hook on a Powerlift rack is just hard to watch. And then it ends up you just doing it.
Right.
But they're solid racks, and those are pretty elite. But then we get into the more of these, I don't even know how to classify them, but like hybrid racks that have cable columns in there, or now they have Smith machines in there. There's some really interesting innovation on these racks, like Prime. I got a Prime rack at my house. I have it in one of my locations in Los Angeles. Like, it's pretty elite. It's got a 4-1 cable column, which means the resistance profile is going to be different. So anyone who's really trying to understand the 1-1, 2-1, 4-1, there's two ways to think about it. The amount of pulleys being used. So 1-1, just one pulley, 2-1, two pulleys, 4-1, and four pulleys. But then there's also the distance of the actual pulley move versus the cable stack movement. So a 2-1 would be 1 foot of cable movement, would be a 2 foot movement of the cable stack. And what that means is that resistance is going to feel like 50% or 25%. 1-1 would be 100%. 2-1 would be 50%. 4-1 would be 25%. And essentially, you're just distributing the forces amongst those pulleys. You just have more mechanical leverage. I'm right. Show me a lever and I can lift the world, right? Archimedes. But then that thought process of how that plays out in terms of programming. 1-1 is just heavy. 2-1, pretty heavy. You can do pull downs and push down work. 4-1, isolation work, external rotation, abduction, adduction. You can get it's a little smoother when you pull harder, right? The 4-1 distributes that force amongst the four pulleys. If I pull really hard, it's not going to have a jump of that cable stack. And Prime's got that right there built into their rack. They actually have, not in the cable stack one, but the plate loaded one, a pin that you can change from a 4-1 to a 4-1 to a 2-1.
Seems cool.
Yeah, it is. Again, like the innovation, like we're in a renaissance of this equipment, and it's only making it more affordable and just more available to us. But Rep is not too far behind. And they, man, you talk about a masterclass on website design. It's hard to overstate their level of just dream it and you can build it kind of thing. It's all right there for you. And just, they're good looking racks too. They're pretty sturdy. They're pretty durable. They're all super quality. The whole like steel and 12 gauge and the 1-inch holes, etc. One interesting aspect that I think is now more commonplace going from a Powerlift to a Soaring X innovation was the holes on all four sides of that cable or that column. It makes a big difference, man, because it's when you're thinking about the ability to do different things, put a dip bar in there, put a roller pad for glute hams, Bulgarians or Rifford Elevateds, whatever you like to call them. You can do, I have an isometric bar from Zeus that you can slide right through the side. That the four holes, that makes a big difference. I actually have for the Prime rack, the dip bars, the roller pad, the isometric bars, or basically like isometric handles. And I could put those any direction I want because of that four-sided hole system. Makes a huge difference there. When we're looking at those racks, you got like the Soaring X, like that's going to be dominant in the team sector and the military sector. And that's for a reason, just the level of innovation, the quality, depending on your, like, aside from my personal opinion on things like triphasic bar or jammer arms, like it's an amazing tool. And you don't have to follow my lead on you have to, those things suck. If you value it, you're 100% right. But then Prime, man, like they're phenomenal. And then Rep's good. Like my ones I always like really jones for is a Watson, which I don't know if you've seen it, but they actually have a dual cable column. They have a vertical column that goes top down and bottom up. So you can do like a belt squat out of it. And then it actually has a Smith machine in there, a four-way Smith machine. So the glide or the guidance on that barbell is now up and down or vertically and then horizontally. So you have all four, you have four directions you can go up and down, forward and back with the Smith machine. So if you're looking at maybe like an incline press on a Smith, which is the best exercise in the world for upper pec development, it's going to press up and it's going to follow more of that arc you have when you're pressing. And you can keep maybe better tension on a muscle group based off of that. You look at it, I can jam that all the way to the back so I can take away the horizontal and create a little bit more balance. So if I want to do some, maybe a squat, like a more leg press like thing, like you see people doing it with a landmine, setting up a hack squat, which is another piece you can add to it. I'm jonesing pretty hard for a Watson power cage with the four-way Smith machine and the dual cable columns with a adjustable cable column in front and then a vertical and vertical top down, bottom up pulley system that I can do different variations on. That one is a pretty cool looking rack. The Big Hitter Sorenex Prime Watson reps up there. Rogue's going to be talked about. It is what it is. They're part of the game. There's rig systems, there's rack systems, there's just a lot of options. And Rogue's not dumb. They're a big company. If someone creates some sort of innovation, they're not going to be too far behind. And that's fine. I find Rogue's website overly confusing and
super tricky to navigate.
And I find their customer service is really poor. I don't think I'm dumb. And I think I've ordered enough gym equipment in my life. I can never seem to get Rogue. I screw it up. Anything I need, like usually it's like the ancillary pieces, like a bar holder or a weight tree. And it's just, I never gotten it right. And it's multiple times. I'm like, all right, either I'm an idiot or this website's overly confusing. And
it's just you.
No. And maybe they're taking advantage of a bunch of CrossFit boxes and dumb soldiers who are just going to buy Rogue stuff for their home gym. And I don't know, but I just find that the website is just, I don't know, unnecessarily hard to navigate. And I think they do that on purpose. I think they're trying to get one over on you. And they're like, oh, you could return it, but you got to pay for the cost of shipping back. Or you can just buy the version that you want in the first place. Like, why isn't that so easier to find? So I don't know, like not a fan of Rogue from just the, I find it's very overly confusing. And it's also too the, I don't know, it feels like a carbon copy of another innovation out there. And I don't know, I don't love it, but it is what it is. It's an option.
So you listed some of them already, but what are the attachments, the things you're getting to go with the rack?
All right. So I hate landmines. I don't like landmines anymore. I just don't.
That one yet, huh?
I don't like them. I don't think the exercises are that great. I just don't. And it's also too, if you have an 8-foot bar, that's 8 feet in front of the rack that you've got to accommodate. That's just a pain in the ass. And who's got 8 feet in front of the rack? And if you do, you're probably going to fill it with something else. I don't love landmines anymore. I find the exercise that I'm doing with it, you can do like a low lateral squat. Like I could do that with dumbbells. Or you can do a like squat to press. I could do that with a barbell. Or like any exercise that I'm doing with a landmine, I feel like I'm forcing it, right? It feels like I'm working really hard to justify it because I have the damn landmine. Meadows row is there, but I can do that with a dumbbell or even a kettlebell. Like I can probably do a better one with a cable, you know, like I'm good at that, or like a good machine with a more pronated grip. I'm good, man. I just don't think landmines are worth it. I'm probably never going to buy a landmine again, to be honest. And like, so there's, that's not answering your question. It actually doesn't answer your question at all.
Not even a little bit, but I still like the answer.
Yeah. Don't get your landmines. And it gets into this rack base versus, all right, do I have the ability to do stations? So if I'm doing private training, like I like a dip bar at the rack, but anyone who's ever been on a good dip station, let's say from Atlantis, you know, it's a definitive difference, right? The stability, it's not moving around a little bit. I still am a fan of just doing dips at the rack, whether I'm making that part of my primary scheme. So the way I structure my upper body pushing is going to rotate between three exercises throughout the calendar year. Our primary one would be a biacromial grip bench, so index on the edge of the smooth. So like a more moderate close grip. Then primary two would be an incline, and then primary three would be a dip. And we're just rotating. So we do 2 weeks of biacromial bench, 2 weeks of incline, 2 weeks of dips. And I always like to do accumulation block and intensification block. So a huge part of my philosophy is going to have a dip bar at the station. And if I had one dip bar with 18 people, that wouldn't work. So having six dip bars for my six racks makes a big difference. And I find dip bars, I don't have buyer's remorse because I can always figure out how to store them at the rack. I don't care what rack it is, between my Prime, my Soarin' X, even my Kaiser rack. Should we talk about Kaiser as well here with the racks? I can store my dip bar pretty seamlessly. It's not a big deal for me. Versus landmine, it's just always in the way and I just hate it. Dip bars, that's one of my attachments. Roller pads next, endless list of stuff. Rear foot elevated split squats, probably the go-to. A supported like Nordic or like a glute ham there. I've been loving Nordic hinges or glute ham hinges. You can do tons of different ISO work, whether it's a like Copenhagen or a side plank variation. I'll do prone, like a prone ISO Nordic. Like I'll just do all sorts of stuff on there. And if you ever get into like maybe some of the FRC stuff and lift offs, like I don't need yoga blocks. I got it right there at the station. And big part of what I do is try to replicate what I don't have with machines with isolation based stuff, either body weight, isometric, or some sort of like closing angle and range stuff like a lift off or a hover or a hold. And the roller pad just is nice, man. It just makes a big difference and I can use it with so many different options. And again, not cumbersome to store or it's not in the way. It's just a good tool. So dip bars, roller pads. And then in terms of like other things, like the ISO handles are okay from Prime. They're fine. I'm now going to be probably just going to get the Zeus ISO barbell. Essentially, you're going to slide it through the rack. Pretty dang sweet. I generally enjoy that. And it's just, I don't know, I just find it's a little bit more replicatable to what I'm more accustomed to. And there's a preference thing, there's a bias. Like I'm more associated with figuring out how to do ISO, overcoming ISOs with a barbell in a rack. So whether it's pressing against pins, maybe I'm doing isometronic or I'm setting up between two bar catches. I just find the Zeus barbell is better for that. But the Prime ISO one, it's, I find myself like, dang, I got to figure out when to use that or why I'm using that because I made the investment. But they're also hard to store because there's two of them. So it is what it is. Good option, not a great option. I'd rather just go with the Zeus bar. And I find I can put that in these four holes there. So if I have a Soarin' X rack or a Prime rack, they're going to have that 1-inch hole. So I can just put that vertically in the back of the rack and not a big deal there. All right. So dip bars, roller pads, a ISO bar from Zeus. That's pretty much what I'm doing. Pull up attachment. I do love a NutriGrip option. That's my primary. So we talked about before, like the three options, my upper body push. My three options, vertical pulls, could be a NutriGrip, a supinated grip, and a pronated grip. And having a good option for that, like Soarin' X has got a great multi-grip bar. They call it the Monkey Bar and it has two different grip width for NutriGrip. And it also has a semi-supinated grip. That's sweet. That's been really good. I like that one a lot. So pull-up wise, definitely make sure you get that. I wouldn't go with just a traditional like straight bar just because you're limited to a pronated or a supinated or a mixed grip, which is coward's grip in my opinion. So that's pretty much what I'm doing there. And when you get into the cable columns, got to get into, all right, probably going to need some sort of tricep rope, couple different cable like attachment handles. Like I got the Cos handle, I got the Prime handle, traditional handles, like just a regular one there. There's a ton of really cool options there, but where are you going to store them? And that's the question is, does your rack become just inundated with stuff? And when you work in the team sector, it's just policing stuff that you don't want to police. No, it's a red, green, yellow band at each rack. No, plates here, blah, blah, blah. It's just, I don't know. The less stuff I got to just yell at kids for, the happier I generally am.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or the less that stuff at the end of the day that I'm picking up and putting in my like very precise spot. And then like, and I know you're out there listening to Strength Coach. If you're going to print off a sheet and laminate it on how to put your plates back, it's overly complicated. It should just make sense. It should feel like it's easy to understand. It's intuitive that they can't screw it up. There's only one place to put it. And you don't have to print off a bunch of different, like this is where the 45s go. It should just go where they go. But if you have 30 bands at every rack and every attachment and you have all this other stuff, like you're just creating a management issue. And I'm a minimalist by nature. Like I like the necessary tools and trimming away everything else. But then I feel like trapped by the options there. But then I'm probably going to double down on the variables and toggling those between sets, rep, tempo, rest period, exercise order. So with that being said, is you don't need a whole lot of stuff at your rack, but like we're all crave the newest and the greatest, having the opportunity to do that. But that's my go-to. And again, it's my bias because I'm usually the guy having to clean up at the other day or just getting mad after a course of a couple of days. Like, why doesn't anyone put anything back? That's my stance on it. But dip bar, roller pad, and then a ISO bar and a good pull-up bar. That's my go-to.
What about dumbbells? Are we going adjustable at every rack? Or you got a set you really like?
I love a good fixed dumbbell. And let's go through the adjustables. There's so many good options now. Power block is old faithful. It's not that durable. I've seen those things bend and break. And then it's just like an eyesore. Being a warped power block, it's just an eyesore. It just sucks. And I'm at the station without the 55 option or the yellow option. Yeah, it blows. And kids are stupid. They're going to just throw dumbbells on the ground. Like, it wasn't that hard of a set. You don't need to throw that. Like, you're not Ronnie Coleman at Metroflex in the 90s. Chill. Like, it's not 200-pound dumbbells. Don't yeah, buddy, me. Like, your 55-pound low-incline bench for sixth was not that challenging. Grow up. But neither here nor there. The option of having a dumbbell station on every rack saves a lot of headaches. Because now I have from a 5 to potentially upwards to 130, I think, power block goes up to, which is fine. The 130 option of power blocks is a huge footprint. Sometimes we forget that. We have multiple options there. Like, I've just seen enough of them break where, unless it's a home option, I don't think it's great in the team sector. I just don't. And then you got so many other good ones now. Snowed's good. And then Rep's got a super heavy one. I know Coop at Garage Gym has done like the durability test and he'll break it down for you. I just don't think anyone is that abreast to understand how hard it is with 18, or let's just say from high school to college. The high volume, the high usage, they're young, they're stupid. They're going to just throw it in the ground. And like Murphy's Law is amplified to a level that most people can't comprehend. And 6 a.m. lifts with a baseball group that's all hopped up on C4 and throwing dumbbells like 30 feet in the air. Like, it's going to happen. And I'd rather have a dumbbell that's resilient. And you see this with fixed dumbbells too. The most college weight rooms are going to have iron grip. That's like the old faithful. But I've seen plenty of iron grip dumbbell heads just shear off from just dumping on the ground. And sometimes it's flooring. If you call up iron grip and say, oh, wow, my dumbbell head broke off. Oh, or do you have it like on 3-millimeter flooring above concrete? Of course, it's going to sever off. Like, it's still on rubber, man. And they didn't drop it from a third story building. It just, they finished their set and they placed it on the ground and the head fell off. Yeah, like they're aesthetic, okay. They got that some sort of a polygon, but what is it, an octagon or a hexagon? Like whatever the geometric shape is. But like, they get locked into a certain thing. So if you're, hey, I want our logo facing up, like you gotta like manually adjust it. So like, I'm getting into my life as an intern or as an assistant and like getting recruiting weekends and having to move hundreds of iron grip dumbbells, like 3 inches or 4 sides to its facing like logo up. Intech's got some good dumbbells now and they actually have a always facing up one. But man, ain't nothing like a Watson dumbbell, man. It is. There is nothing like it. Like, I'm a Watson guy, man. I know. And don't tell me about customs and don't tell me about whatever duty fees. Like, it's worth it. It's just worth it. I don't care. If you don't have the stomach to get a call from the Port Authority and some sort of weird maritime lawyer about getting three tons of steel from England and then dealing with their legal processes and feeling like you are at the mercy of some weird maritime legal system and Port Authority and weird transpo that's going to come from that freight that comes over, don't get it. It's not for you. You don't get the benefit from the Watson experience. And I'm like, I look at that as, you know what? And Watson is not for everybody. It's just for the right people. But there's nothing like it. Like, Sovin's got a good one. They're pretty solid. I would put them right up there. They're out of Germany. You know, it just comes down to brand affiliation, really. Like, if I had to choose between one or the other, like, Watson's a little bit more, I'm more familiar with it. And I can tell you this, man, I've had a location for I've had those dumbbells for 8 years now. And I mean, I'm seeing on average, probably 1,000 sessions a week for the last at least 6 years. And I use dumbbells every single session, multiple times. They're still rolling, man. They still spin. They still hold up. They're still looking good. I take care of them. I WD-40 them. I polish them up. I make them look pretty. Don't get me wrong. That's my shiny new bike. I don't want to ever look bad. It's a showcase part of my room. But, man, it is a tough-to-beat thing. But Sovin's not too far behind. And I know a lot of people like, no, I'm a Sovin guy. Okay, good for you. And I don't know. Yeah, it's a good one. I just have a preference towards Watson. But with that being said, I get it. You need an adjustable option at your rack and you want to make sure that you're limiting transit time and you don't want to have a isolated dumbbell station. I get it. But I would say this, if you're like going over like a dream like room, and that's what we're doing here, like building our dream. And like I said, I want a Watson rack with a Smith Machine option because I think Smith Machine is one of the more underrated tools. And screw you if you don't. You're probably going to be a guy who really likes the jammer arms and landmines if you don't like the Smith Machine. It is what it is. Pick a side. And Eleiko's got a good, actually, now they're building out one. Corey Schlesinger was doing one he had a rack from Eleiko that has a Smith Machine in the back. And good on Eleiko. They're doing a great job of innovating and updating. And their racks are good. I feel like they look a little bit, I don't know, stock. That's a bad term for it. It just feels like it's in a showroom kind of thing. I feel like I'm at a convention center. I don't know. Sorry, I love your plates. I love your bars. I can do without your racks. I'll eat it if they come back and say, we're going to give you a sweetheart deal and make it worth your time and money. As it stands today, this will be forever out there. So sorry, Aleka. But all right, well, let's go into dream-like scenario because that's what we're doing here. I want Watson power cage with a Smith Machine and dual cable columns. And then I want Watson dumbbells so far. That's my dream list here.
That's money. And what about machines, like clubs, maces? I'll get weird with it. It's weird.
I don't want to go clubs and maces.
Those are out.
No, I'm not doing that anymore.
Yeah. Screw them.
Just where do I store it? Where do I store it? I'm a middleware, man. Give me a good storage option. I'll consider it. Right. And then you go on Instagram and YouTube of how do people store mason and clubs? And they're all like, dad is a carpenter or they're just turning handy. Screw you, man. Screw you and your decent handyman skills. I'm not doing all that. And I'm not paying a local welder to come in and build me out something. I resent how hard it is to store them. And the value that I like, don't get me wrong, I think they're a great tool from hitting triplanar and different angles and whatnot, but just from a storage perspective, and I'm putting that with kettlebells too. I'm building a drink facility. I'm getting thick, 2-inch thick diameter Watson dumbbells that revolve, not getting kettlebells. I'm just not. I'm not doing it anymore. I'm just because of storage. I hate it. I hate the storage aspect. I want minimalist. I want clean lines and I want stuff where it goes. And I don't want to constantly pick up after people. So heavy ass dumbbells that revolve from Watson, no kettlebells, clubs, or maces. Let's just say it. Sorry. We've been doing stuff. I've gotten a couple from Kettlebell Kings. They're fine kettlebells. But you know what they are? They're on the floor of my garage and they're always in my way.
Yeah.
And tripping over. I move those more than anything else in my garage. And it's just reminding me how little I want anything to do with it. And I end up putting in a spot that's inaccessible and I never use them.
Yeah.
And But with that being said, machines. Okay. Let's get into it. Right. I don't think we need any upper body pressing machines. I'm just going to say that. I think the options for upper body pressing are good. From a dumbbell press, from a barbell press. We can adjust a weight pretty seamlessly. If I have a full set of dumbbells, I don't need a whole lot in terms of upper body pressing. And I already have my upright cable columns from Watson. I'm good on any kind of
Smith adduction
slider. True. Yeah, I'm not worried about it. Primed got some great upper body pressing from a flat to horizontal, and they have loading the strength curve, which I definitely think we should talk about. Atlantis has got some great ones. Arsenal's got some great ones. I just don't want them. Face eaters. When I think about a machine, it's got to fill a blind spot. And blind spots are behind, right? It's behind my head. I got to figure out a machine to isolate a joint action or a muscle group. That's hard to do. And when I think about good machines, I think about the bottlenecks I have in my program. I talked about my vertical pulling options, a neutral grip, a supinated grip, and a pronated grip. I want to think about a vertical option that can help me simulate that. Prime has some of the best pull down options you can imagine. Just phenomenal. That 2-to-1 single stack, and I can change it from a seated position for pull downs. I can change that out and put a row position, top notch. They're pulling exercises. So they have a load the strength curve, and it's 1, 2, and 3, beginning, middle, and end range. And I can accentuate each part of that range, which you look at people, and you can look at people during a pull-up. You can see it play out. So you see people who have a really high body mass. They have very poor length, right? So I'm going to lengthen this position here, just relative strength. I can't get going. All right, so when I'm thinking about a machine, I want to load that position. So I want to load the length of position. Boom, prime. Prime comes in, and I can do their pull down, which they have a couple really cool options. I would definitely adhere to watching Rich Kasem and the stuff that he does. But they have a seated pull down where you can get really into that lengthened position that comes from a more semi-flexed into this like arcing position. Beautiful machine. They have tons of great rowing options. I believe it's called the extreme row, where you're in an angle, you're inclined, you're prone. And again, you could load that beginning, middle, and end range. Another great variation. And what that's going into is, all right, now I can start to look at maybe that person who has good body composition or not excessively heavy, but they can't get their chin above the bar. So I can work that shortened range. And I can strengthen these things to push them over the top. So I'm talking from like I found a blind spot or a weak spot in my programming, or I want to do a post-fatigue or pre-fatigue or do something where I'm trying to develop that part of the pattern that's weak. And the same thing for posterior chain. I don't think there's any shortage for hip dominant posterior chain stuff. Like, one thing you'll never see me ever do or program is a weighted hip thrust. Don't love it. Not a fan. Just don't like it. And I feel like most people are hyperlordotic, and it's going to lead into some sort of just hyperextension of the back. And we're not really doing that. Plus, it's EMG recruitment off of a 500 pound barbell hip thrust versus a unloaded hip thrust. Whatever Brett Contreras is saying and his bias and agenda, I don't think it's that markedly different. And usually, and this is from Gary Gray, the best way to innervate or recruit a muscle is to lengthen it, not shorten it. So if you have underdeveloped glutes, we shouldn't be thinking about doing shortened range stuff. We should be thinking about doing lengthened range stuff. And the glute is an extender of the hip. So if you want to be in lengthened range, you got to be hip flexed. Good old-fashioned RDLs. Good old-fashioned back extensions. Old-fashioned incline back extension. We'll talk about that here in a second. But posterior chain, from a hip dominant perspective, majority of the stuff in a shortened position, not necessary. So you don't need a weighted hip thrust. You just don't. You don't. Maybe you want to do it in activation. It's an isolation exercise. It's a pillar exercise. It's great. All good there. But in terms of a primary, get out of here. No way. Knee dominant's another story, though. And Prime's got a phenomenal prone leg curl. And just, it's great. Again, looking at the strength curve, the beginning, middle, and end range, and you see this, okay, there's a biarticular aspect. So the hamstring has a biarticular function. So it crosses two joints. All right, I got to be able to load through that entire range of motion because that rec fem needs to be loaded. Then I look at the other aspects of that. I have monoarticular joints or muscles that they're going to need to be loaded in that end range or even that, like that gastroc. And that has a impact on flexion. So you can change the foot position. So from a plantar flex to a dorsiflex, and just the options there. And you look at like, all right, comparing pull up to something like a Nordic, there's going to be a big chasm between the people who can just knock out Nordics and can't. The majority of people can't. And if you ever do a Nord board, you see these like a gross amount of people working in this like 200 newtons force, which isn't good, regardless if you're male or female. Doing Nordics until they're like blue in the face, I don't know necessarily is a great progression. I would say a prone leg curl, whether you're doing 2 feet with various foot positions and you're overloading the beginning, middle, and end range, it's a great alternative. Now, one thing is there's a prone position. You're loading from a lengthened position, and then you could look, or a hip extended position, and then you could look at it from a seated position. You're loaded from a hip flex position, and it gets into that biarticular, monoarticular joint action. So if you're thinking, okay, I need to do something with a prone, because I'm going to have some limitations in that hip extended position, probably should be thinking about a hip flex position as well. And a seated leg curl. And prone's got a great one as well. I just love the idea of loading that beginning, middle, and end range. Now, here's a great question. Do we want to go with plate loaded or cable stack?
Great question. Why don't you tell us?
Yeah, I'm gonna.
Yeah, please do.
I think you should go with cable stack.
Okay.
Now, caveat, you need to know where that thing's going. Can't be wishy-washy with moving your equipment around, because cable stacks are very unforgiving if you have to move it. You give me 3 interns and 2 dollies and watch them try to almost kill themselves every single time. The nice thing about a plate stack is you can move it pretty easily. Don't wait on it. But what I would say is you're going to have to get an egregious amount of plates to accommodate multiple plate-loaded machines. You go to any old-school college weight room with several hammer strength pieces, you're just seeing tons and tons of plates. But you're also seeing a lot of storage issues and a lot of places to clean up. The amount of times I've had to put 25s in the right spot and 45s in the right spot and 10s in the right spot in the hammer area is beyond what I want to talk about.
Exactly what you're talking about at Army?
Yeah.
That place is always a mess.
What a mess. And it's always you dumb cadets who don't know how to put things back and thinks about, like, this is my space because I go to the academy. It's not. You're a guest. I don't care if you're on the strength team.
Pretty sure.
We should have just got plate loaded or a cable stack. Sorry, not plate loaded, cable stack.
Cable, yeah.
Yeah, cable column. Let's just do that. I don't care. I just don't care. I'm not dealing with that. And I'm going to commit to putting it in that one spot. And I'm going to say to my staff, is this absolutely where we want to go with this? There's no, we can move it later. There's none of that. It's not going to happen. So if we start to think about, okay, now I'm making a commitment to machines, I think you need to be able to, as they say, measure once, cut twice. Like, that's a plate loaded mentality. I'm a measure twice, cut once. I'm a cable stack guy with my machines. And Prime actually has the option to change it just by a dial. So it's pretty sweet.
That's great.
Atlantis has some great machines, some really good machines. And I would look at it, and this might seem counterintuitive. I get it. I think we need to look at some lower body push based machines, like a leg press and a leg extension, potentially a hack squat, potentially a pendulum squat. And the reason behind that is, and this is something that, again, you're like, oh, you're showing your opinion here. This is my podcast, so I can show my opinion all I want. Is I think people are better squatters than they actually are, and we need to have better contingencies in place. And I think belt squat sucks. I think it's massively overrated. Like, I put that right there with jammer on. I just don't like the way it feels. I feel like most people get a little hingy because it's belt loaded.
Pulling you back a little bit.
Pulling back, then we're taking away from good squat mechanics. We might not be loading the axial spine, but you're actually not getting the squat mechanic that we want. So let's say you use a shoulder harness. Okay, someone who has back issues, shoulder harness can be pretty uncomfortable. So, like, all being said, if you're going to go with a lower body push, like machine style option, I think you should probably just go with a leg press. To be honest, what are we trying to do with a leg press? Load the anterior part of the leg, the quad. How do we do that? We get maximal knee flexion and we keep our torso perpendicular. How do we load that optimally? All right, there's some good squatters out there. Great. Have at it, Hoss. But if we need to really load up a squat-like pattern and they don't have good biomechanics or they have some sort of orthopedic issue like a back issue or hip issue, man, leg press is smooth. It's a great idea. And you always kick yourself if you don't have it. I know we've come full circle, but dang, man, I think we should probably revisit that one. And Atlantis has got one of the, it's actually a hack squat. It is a unbelievable press. It reminds me of the old pendulum. It was actually the original pendulum squat from Matrix. It's a great piece. So it's, I guess, now considered a misnomer, considering pendulum squats, that it looks more like a bear squat, but Atlantis has a great pendulum squat. Watson actually has a really good pendulum squat as well. Like, it's a really good one. And the leg presses are good too. Leg extensions, again, like Prime has some really good ones. And then so does Atlantis. There's some great tools. And Arsenal is another really great company as well. Like, they just, you got to look at what the bodybuilders like, because that's what they use and they're good at it and they know how to build muscle tissue. If they have a preference for it, you're probably on the right track.
Yeah.
The same thing with weightlifting and like, all right, like what kind of bar is good? They'll tell you it's a Leica, right? They're the best. And Worksong used to be really good. But if you're going to get an Olympic bar, Olympic plate, the Leica's best. You can go to where weightlifters are going. If you adhere to powerlifting, they're going to tell you, get a Texas bar. They're going to say that definitively because it has rigid and it's got good knurling. Sure. Okay, great. Do that. And whatever that is, but follow where the best in the world go and you can't go wrong.
What about back extension? You mentioned it and then you didn't really get into it.
Yeah. All right. So lengthened position of hip extension or hip hinge is critical for developing that posterior chain. Now, there's a horizontal, so a glute ham, and there's incline 45. I personally believe both are necessary. And when you look at it, we're loading through that arc, that posterior chain is just critical for. So a glute ham, call me old fashioned, I still think it's mission critical. I really do. I think Nordics are, the ability to do Nordics at the rack and not having a partner glute ham or partner Nordic is a game changer. Just watching kids fumble around or get someone catapulted over someone else. And hold down the 300-pound guy. I've held it enough 300-pound offensive lineman to go, this is just not a good idea. So having the roller pad at the rack is great. But I think a glute ham and teaching either a horizontal back extension and then going into a maybe concentric-oriented glute ham or a eccentric one and they roll back, progressing that stuff like razors, going into a hip extension to a glute ham. There's a lot of great options from a glute ham. And I would say that like horizontal action, right? So now I'm parallel to the ground when I'm extended versus the incline. I'm at that 45. You look at the orientation of that lengthened position from the hamstrings to the glute development and the value of loading that one up. And it gets into this, not many people are great hingers either, right? And like having that option of training the, at least the musculature and the pattern in a constrained environment and demonstrating capacity to do that before progressing them back into a barbell, pretty clutch. And then it gets into the options are open, man. I think a lot about the protocols I want to do. And I think about the potential of my program based off of tools at my disposal. And I look at it from probably never going to run out of stuff for upper body pressing with a barbell and dumbbell. Like I'm just never felt limited by, oh, dang, I don't have that machine. But I definitely feel that way with lower body pushing. So if I'm going to do like a 6, 12, 25, good luck doing that without a leg press and a pendulum squat. Let's say I want to do the same thing on posterior chain. Good luck doing that with just a barbell. We're going to do good mornings, snatch grip RDL, and then RDL. That's miserable. Talk about like bad output in the 25 versus, all right, we're going to do a snatch grip RDL for 6. Then we'll do a glute ham for 12, and then we'll do a 45-degree back extension for 24. Great. Like, that's a great pairing, and I feel good about that. Just go nuts. You know, go until your posterior chain cramps, rest 3 minutes, and come back in there again and do it again. Congrats. You now know what it feels like. So those are like my go-to machines, is fixing my blind spots, and they're our best in class, and I would say just follow where the best in the world do it. If there's a high-level bodybuilder on there, and it's, I feel this, he or she feels that a lot more, probably on the right track.
Is there anything you think we missed? Anything I didn't ask or anything you'd add to the list?
Functional trainers.
Okay.
Kaiser Pneumatic Resistance. They have cable columns. They have functional trainers. They're really great. Kaiser's got some good machines too, actually. They're pretty solid. And the nice thing about a Kaiser is just that ability to just change the weight pretty seamlessly by the pneumatic resistance, which is drop sets or that's not heavy enough, filling it up. But their functional trainers, they're pretty top-notch, man. Cable column's really good, too. The only thing about Kaiser, and I think anyone who's ever had it would agree, it's just not that durable for group environments. And when it goes down, man, they're expensive to change or replace. So Free Motion, Prime, and Watson have a great functional trainer. Prime's just great. That's a good one. It's got great cable columns. Watson has this actually like pad that you can fix on so you can do all sorts of stuff in a more stable environment. Functional trainers are great. Like from either I want to do my chops and my lifts, my rows and my presses. I can do different rotational work. I can do different split squat variations. I can do a ton of variation with these like basic patterns that I want to do. I can progress. I can regress. Amazing. That's a cool one. And it falls into the camp of, do we really need a functional trainer for cable column? If you have it at the rack, great. If you don't have a cable column at the rack, you should probably visit getting at least a functional trainer around the proximity of the rack to be able to accommodate some variation with you in your workout. Those would be some like big ones I think we should definitely throw in there. And then like, it'll be an endless list, but you should exercise off of forearms or calves and tib anterior. I don't know. Like I know there's a renaissance on like, we need to work these smaller muscle groups first, but I don't know. Like I'm still not, I just feel like there's, when's the list going to end and we only have so much time? And where am I going to put it? Like, I know everyone's probably like, here he goes. I hate cleaning this stuff, man. Like, organizing it. And like, anyone who has kids, the more toys you got, the more things they're going to pull out and the more things you got to put back as a parent. And it's the same thing as a gym owner. Like, why are you setting yourself up for a miserable life by having all this endless list of stuff that you're barely using? Pareto principle it and find out where your gaps are and find the best machines or tools to get the job done. Do you think the world-class chef in somewhere in Paris is like, dang, man, if I just had more ingredients, it can create a great meal. Or if I just had that sous vide like thing that I was wanted to do, I could finally make a steak the way I always wanted to. Like, I think they can do by with what they got in a higher level. That's what I'm saying here. You know, it's not what you don't have. It's what you do have and how you can make the most of it.
That kind of leads me to my very last question here. Is like, why is doing something like this important to you? Like having this kind of thought process and thinking through best case scenario.
If you can't dream, what's the point? I'm constantly fantasizing about different weight rooms and different gyms. And I'm in the great fortune that I get to design and create weight rooms pretty frequently. It's one of my favorite things to do. It's just, it's field of dreams, man. If you can dream it, you can build it. And it's a constant getting out there and trying to figure out what's the best piece of equipment and what innovations out there and what cool features are out there, but also too, not being like wasteful. Gunnar Peterson's not a great example to follow. It's just an endless list of stuff that's not set up for people. People come to my home gym. Oh, this isn't really good for multiple people working out here. It's not for that.
That's the idea here.
Fine. It's my Gunnar Peterson little oasis. It's not for training people. It's for me. I want these options. But in a group fitness gym or a team sector gym, man, if there's stuff lying around like stupid landmines, yeah, someone's going to get hurt. But going back to the point of why this is a good exercise, it's like that. One, I want to have big, grand ideas about what a weight room could be and just the aesthetic and the color schemes, the symbiotic relationship between equipment and space, the synergy between like just having stuff that's heavy and light, or the balance of this piece is here, this piece is there, the managing of ingress, egress, and then finding the best in class tools and not just going off of, I have a brand affiliation. And I do, I've definitely shown that. Like I can tell you right now, I got Sorinex racks, I got Prime racks, I got Kaiser racks, I got Watson dumbbells. I got Leco bars, I got Watson bars, I got Kabuki bars, I got everything. I definitely have a brand affiliation, and whether it's aesthetic or they just haven't broken for me, or they've just been super high performance, or I just think it's a higher quality product. And for me, it's, I want to get past this like overhead, getting out of debt into a profitability stage. So I'm not worrying about buying stuff over and over again. The longevity of this and the durability matters quite a bit. Plus, I just don't want to worry about it after I buy it. Like, I don't have to circle back and go, oh, now I got to replace it or fix it. Like, I don't like that stuff. And to be honest, I probably won't do a whole lot of bands in the future. I just don't like them. They're just constantly breaking. There's just so many things that break. I'm like, you good. I don't want to do that. I don't care anymore.
Sweet. This was awesome, Tim. I appreciate you.
Hell yeah, man. All right, buddy.
All right, later.